It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
My name is Penny Logue. I live on the Tenacious Unicorn Ranch, and I go she, her, hers.
Hi, I'm Monty. Also live on the ranch.
I'm Jay. She, they. I also live on the Tenacious Unicorn Ranch. I'm a bit of the permaculturalists, so anything involving gardening, kind of my purview.
Today we're going to be talking about the ranch itself and just kind of the history of it, but also that there's a documentary that's going to be coming out documenting everything that's gone on in the recent history of the project, and also just kind of like picking your brain too about kind of the things that you all have been doing is kind of like some of the other big themes we've been talking about on the show, whether it's in terms of community self-defense or building infrastructure.
Yeah, we listen to your show a lot. We really dig it up here.
Oh, thanks. That means a lot. Well,
thank you.
Let's just start at the beginning. So how did the idea of starting an alpaca ranch come about? How did that get into your mind that this was something that you were going to really do?
Yeah, I mean, it was a road to get to that. You know, like, I'd always wanted to do a homestead project. I grew up, this is Penny, I grew up on a ranch here in Colorado. In a farm more than a ranch, but, you know, we did birds at times. And so it was just kind of always the ideal for me to live on an active ranch. And, for a while it was like a solo dream. I just wanted a small homestead that I could disappear onto. But, as time passed and as things got like weirder and everything started to kind of fall apart, I think that there was like something in me that was very much like, let's make this trope come true and just do a commune correctly and like just get it going and make it a safe place for everybody who's getting knocked around by this like weird life right now.
Do you want to talk a little bit about, first of all, what is an alpaca and what was the decision around that? Because my understanding is you don't eat them, right? You're just...
No.
So they're kind of like a sheep and a llama, right? Together?
They're their own little thing. They're camelids, so they're part of that family. You can crossbreed them with both llamas and vicuña. So they're an interesting little... They're an interesting little wool-bearing animal, you know. They're adorable. They're easy to raise. I mean, as far as like we raise them very traditionally, so
yeah, they've got long necks and giant eyes.
Yeah, they're very magical.
A little goofy sometimes.
A little goofy and a little obstinate constantly, but but they're a lot of fun. And I really did want an animal when I was starting things off. We got chicken, ducks, and alpaca because I wanted an animal that like we could clothe ourselves with and that we didn't have to kill. Like, it was really important to me. And I found that in the alpaca. And then there was also there's a really big need for rehomed alpacas to be taken care of. It's like a weirdly underground thing, but there's a lot of alpaca that need rehoming constantly. And we do what we can with that as well.
Are you making money to sustain the project off of the wool?
Yeah. It's one of our income sources. We take it and we process it. We don't do it on ranch because we're at about 1,800 pounds a year now.
700
dry. Anyway, we have a lot of wool, And so we don't have any capability of doing it ourselves. So we send it out to get washed and then turned into yarn or socks. We're doing dryer balls this year, hats, insoles, and then some yarn. And then we sell those all on our website, tenaciousunicornranch.com. And that's one of the income streams that helps sustain the project.
And that's like lucrative enough to like help keep you all afloat?
It helps. It's one of the venues. Yeah. It's, we don't lose money on it. We definitely make money every year. We've never not sold out our stock, especially of the alpaca.
It certainly sustains the alpaca themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've looked at a lot of, like, I guess you'd call them intentional communities or kind of like eco-villages and stuff like that. And that seems to be like one of the major tensions is that people basically are still stuck in this capitalist framework. So they have to have some sort of business and then they've got to like sell something or, you know, either have to have a job away from where they live, you know, just like, you know, most of us do. So they're still stuck kind of like, you know, doing some sort of thing on the land or making some sort of cooperative business where they are.
It's a bit of a, you know, it's like the contradictions of living in capitalism. Especially as a like socialist or anarchist project, like you have to find a way, at least internally, to kind of separate yourself from it while having that interface.
Yeah.
To be able to bring in supplies and especially expand and things like that.
Yeah. We like to say we're escaping capitalism. We haven't escaped it yet. Like there's a terminal velocity you got to reach.
Well, you mentioned permaculture. I'm curious, you know, what you're growing there. The scenes from it seem, I wouldn't say desolate, of course, but it's kind of like wide open plains.
Yeah. It's very high elevation, which makes it a little more difficult. And without a greenhouse, you can't really grow a lot. As far as, like, human food goes.
We're working on our pastures.
Yeah, we're working on our... Yeah, there's also, like, we only have... as for, like, soil remediation, we only have two pastures right now. One for boys, one for girls. So we can't do, like, rotational grazing. So that's kind of depleted our land a little bit. But we have been doing fencing after all the stuff went down. And so that's going to be a big part of that is getting that going and then building that soil back up. And then also just, we're hoping to get a barn going and that barn will also have a whole full outfitted greenhouse kind of attached along to it. So once that's going, then we'll really be able to just, you know, all the different, cooperative companion plant groupings and guilds. It's a work in progress, kind of, at this point.
Yeah. Our plan always was, like, to get settled, then start the soil building for the pastures. We actually took in December, we took in 96 additional animals from a kind of an emergency rescue that we weren't really expecting. And then everything weird happened, which set back our fencing schedule, so we didn't get our pastures up. But we will, before the end of the year, along with the new exterior fence, and we'll be able to start with that. I don't know if that's boring. Like, it's just like, that's what's exciting in our life is new pastures and fencing.
A more permanent fence.
Yeah.
What do the alpacas eat? Are you able to make that on site or gather that on site or do you have to bring that in from somewhere else?
Kind of in long-term plans to be able to make it on site, but that's a pretty intensive process. And the way that farmers do it in the valley is not exactly permaculture. It's very like classic industrial kind of monoculture. So I've been kind of trying to think of a way to kind of integrate it in more of like a, I don't know, like
on site
like, grasslands, yeah, management versus, you know, like tilling and planting and getting huge amounts of equipment. I don't know, it's not really like producing hay, alfalfa hay for livestock is not really done in like a permaculture way. And I haven't really found a whole lot of information on how to do that.
Yeah, right now we do buy locally here in the valley, but it's orchard grass and alfalfa hay mix. Depending on what time of year it is that we buy from like the more verdant parts of the valley and then bring up here. So it's all local, but but not grown here.
Let's kind of get back to how the project started. So take us kind of back to the inception. How did people find each other once everything kind of came together and like you were actually on the land?
I mean, it was Twitter, hands down, that we found most everybody. We started with just three of us in Livermore, and then had a rough run at the beginning, just kind of getting things set up. Big landlord issues. We were renting that ranch, and that just became problem after problem after problem. And then Bonnie stepped in, and we really started to hunt for a place to purchase. And me and Bonnie met through Twitter.
Yep.
We just kind of put a call out, right? Like, what?
Yeah, I came across randomly a post about the ranch and how they were having issues with the landlord. And everything about it was basically everything I've ever wanted to do. And it became more and more clear the more started speaking with Penny and figuring out what exactly is happening here. So I like to say that I discovered them on a Wednesday. I had a phone call with them on a Saturday. That following Monday, I was putting my 2 weeks in at my job. And within 3 weeks, I was here.
What was your impression like getting there? Have you been to that area before?
I had been to Colorado Springs. I was for quite some time looking to move to Colorado. It just so happened that like just about everything I wanted to do was already happening at the Tenacious Unicorn Ranch, and it just kind of hit every check mark that I didn't even expect to be able to check off as many as I could when the opportunity came up. And it's been a heck of a like weird like dream come true, and also a bit of a nightmare in terms of the stress and responsibility, but it's been wonderful.
Yeah, this is Jay. I actually also found the ranch through Twitter. I was like furloughed from my job, and so I was like living with my parents, but they're very conservative. And during the BLM uprisings in Dallas, which is near where they were living, they basically pulled me aside and were like, if you're associated with Antifa, you can't stay here because it's a terrorist organization. So I left and then was like Trans Commune Win. And one of my permaculture mutuals on Twitter, like, hey, have you heard of this? And posted the Vice article. And I messaged him and was like, can I come visit? And I've been here ever since.
And then Jay never left. Yeah, yeah. It's been great.
How has that been? Has that been, because we've gone through that ourselves with this project. Has that been like a blessing or a curse, or it's mixed?
Oh, it's definitely
it's
mixed.
Definitely mixed. I think that it did provide us with an extra layer of protection, you know, having eyes on the ranch. More globally, I guess. I don't know how to put that without sounding weird, but like having people like outside of the group we'd already built be aware of what's happening, I think forestalled a lot of what could have turned into a really, really awful situation. And then of course it's taxing, you know, like it does take days to give, days that we could be putting up fence or whatever. We're doing interviews and, things like that, but also to advance this project and to get Tenacious Unicorn set up in other states, we have to reach people, and this has been a really great platform to making the right connections to moving this project forward as we set out to do. So it is definitely a lot more blessing than curse, but it's not without its downsides, certainly, like, you know. Like Westcliff is super divided about all the attention that we get, but it's worth it. It's worth it.
Well, let's talk about the town because that I think that's kind of an interesting place to start with the history and kind of like the larger trajectory. Tell us about the general area. What's it like? The town that's next to the ranch.
From what I've experienced, from the moment we rolled in. Quaint is definitely a word that comes to mind.
For sure.
And our experience of the people, like we've gotten to know a lot of business owners, and we often send a lot of people who come to visit their way. There's a wonderful diversity in beliefs, and they're largely white, but I mean,
yeah, yeah, white and conservative, but right. That's okay. Like,
yeah, no, it's, you know, everyone has a good mix of beliefs. You know, we know some libertarians, we know some conservatives, we know some liberals, and a handful of leftists.
Handful of leftists, yeah.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of people out here. And it's really funny when, like, the real extremist right folk are like, we represent everyone. You offended us, so you offended the entire county. But, like, we love a lot of the people here, and like, most of the people that we talk to hate them.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just like the audacity to speak for like an entire valley. Like, it really, like, it's this really small percentage of really extremist people that want to be center stage all the time and be right all the time. But if you just have to look a little ways past that, and you find amazing people in this valley, just all of, like, truly amazing, like, motivated, self-made individuals. I don't know. Like, it's very rugged. Like, I like it.
Reaction to the project has, I mean, been mixed, you would say, from townspeople, or it's just been kind of like, oh, cool, more the merrier?
No, I mean, it's never, it's been pretty mixed. A lot of people are really jazzed about what we're doing. There is a very vocal, very, like, openly volatile group of people that like to try to incite around us, and definitely have made it known that they hate us quite a bit. They really aren't quiet about it.
It's a mutual feeling, to be fair.
At this point, it really is a mutual feeling. But it's the very extremist elements, and not like the standard opinion. I think most people are indifferent in the way that you are to things that don't affect you. Really. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I would say probably like more than half the county barely even knows we exist.
Yeah.
A lot of people kind of keep to themselves, but like, we've definitely seen a lot more positive than
negative. Way more positive than negative. The negative is just louder.
Yeah.
So let's get into the real jerks, the people that, that vocally oppose you. There's going to be a documentary that's going to be coming out called Tenacious that kind of centers around this issue that far right militias, as we understand it. There was basically a siege against the ranch. So who were these people? What group were they in? Were they in a group at all, or were they just a small group of people?
You know, we can't really say for sure. We know that they had militia ties to some extent or the other in the valley. It's hard to slap a label on it, but like definitely the prevalent labels that you see people putting on themselves out here is the Three Percenters and the Oath Keepers. And so just judging from what we've learned, we assume association in that realm.
We've also heard some notion that there are two militias out here, one that kind of is more by the book, and one who's a little more of a rogue element, and we figure it's the rogue element that we encountered.
And what was their beef with y'all? Just that, was it politics? Was it?
Almost certainly.
It was definitely politically aligned. A lot of the messages we got about like burning us liberals out. They kept calling us liberals, which was really weird.
Kind of
and like really offensive. I was really like, no, we're anarchists. Like, excuse, we're way worse than that. Like, go fuck yourself. It was definitely like a continuation of intimidation and scare tactics used against more left-leaning folks up here. And then the topper was that we're trans. and that we run a queer haven. I think that's really what sent them over that edge.
In the when y'all saw the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, the 4th of July was also, we called them out on this really fashy Trump protest that they had. And they still, to this day, that's what they get mad about,
yeah.
Is that we called them. They're like, you called the whole town Nazis. It's like, no, we called your parade a fascist propaganda march in which there was Nazis, which, like, undeniably so. Like, there was, like, Confederate flags. There was 3% of, like, there was that dude with the white...
There's a Christian fascist flag that
just flies. Yeah, they just fly. In the middle of town. There was the White Lives Matter shirts. Like, yeah. It was like, no, like, once again, you've conflated yourself, the Nazi, with the entire town. We didn't make that mistake.
Right. And then because it ended up being something of a Trump rally, and it was very politically charged, there's like one guy almost literally blowing kisses to every cop he passed by screaming about it.
And so we just like vented on social media like you do, you know what I mean?
We put out like 3 tweets about it.
And like we really didn't make a big deal out of it. But like the way that they acted was like we like came in and smashed China or something. Like it was really like they blew up hard. And that's really what started like the bad feelings, like kind of put us on radar. And it was a mild escalation. Until it became...
Until Nine News came out.
Yeah, and the Nine News piece in which they had called us in for animal abuse. And so...
With
the sheriff's department. And so Nine News happened to be here filming kind of a fluff piece about us. And the sheriff rolled up, like a deputy of the sheriff's department rolled up to do an inspection because we were like... You've been accused of animal abuse. Like, and we were just like, oh, like, did you want to just, like, it's all on film. We were straight up like, oh, did you want to just take a tour? And so we gave this officer a tour at the end of which she was like, yeah, I'm just going to drop this case because, like, obviously this was just some dumb shit. And then after that, things got, which we, like, really thought was like a whatever moment Nine News fluff piece.
Yeah.
It sparked something for them. That, like, reporters got death threats. The ranch got death threats. We started getting warnings. We were being followed all the time. Like, we would leave the ranch, and, like, at the end of our road, we would pick up a tail. Like, not a good tail, just, like, a you-know-I'm-here kind of a tail. And then it was, and then it escalated from there.
Good as in quality,
actually.
Trying to study what you're doing rather than like, hey, I'm here.
Yeah, it was like the opposite of what you want to do if you're like tailing for information.
Yeah, intimidation.
It was just crazy what we saw as like a non-impetus. But like it had been building for a while. The HCN article really got them, really gave them.
That's the one that was reprinted in the local rag, right?
Yeah, they reprinted it in the local right-wing rag with editor's notes. Basically calling at the end for like our extermination, but in that nice Christian way that you say it. And so it escalated quickly. And the Nine News piece, like to be perfectly honest, if you report on us most of the time, you receive a couple of death threats like that. It's par for the course at this point, but.
AJ Plus actually was getting death threats while they were here.
While they were up here reporting on us, people were telling them to leave town. It, like, so they took it to this whole other level of hatred that I look at as only being because they thought we were, like, uber vulnerable, trannies. You know what I mean? Like, they were really condescending. And then it just escalated into that week where they came onto the property. But, it was a weird buildup. And I don't know, like it was not, we weren't ready. We weren't expecting it. We weren't ready.
We're ready now.
now we're ready. Yeah. It was absolutely insane. And then the community stepped up and helped us through it in a way that like we couldn't even have imagined when we put the call out for help. We had armor mailed to us, guards. We had a 4-man guard team up here for 30 days in a row voluntary, just people putting their lives at risk to keep this place safe. It was mind-blowing, and I feel the only reason that we're still safe, that we're still here, that we made it through that time.
Yeah, it's been described as a siege. So talk about that. How are they actually sieging you? And talk about the support from the local community.
Well, I mean, the siege aspect was we had to stop working because we do handy labor off of the ranch. And we had to stop working out of fear of, like, kind of exposing our clientele because threats had been made about, like, places where we were working and things like that. And then, you know, after we caught them on the property, you know, like, that, there's a brazenness to that. That means that you could kind of be attacked anywhere, you know? And so we definitely stayed on ranch for 2 weeks, just kind of like hunkered down. There was, instead of tailing, they were doing this weird drive by the front of the ranch.
At night, they would pull their rear brake fuses.
And turn off their headlights. Turn off
their headlights and like slowly cruise
and
by.
And roll by really slow.
At one point, somebody sent us a camera with a little, or a cell phone, an old cell phone with a little thermal camera on it. And there's a ridge opposite the road from us, and you just see like a column of vehicles go up there and like stay halfway up the ridge
and just
slowly cool down.
And we just watch their engines cool down with the thermal. Yeah,
it wasn't quite good enough resolution to see like what they were doing, but yeah. Like they're sitting there on this high point up opposite us, like probably doing some surveillance.
Yeah, it got really creepy. And really tense. Like, it was about 2 weeks we were kind of locked. People were bringing us groceries. We were up armor all the time. Like, all of us wore vests all the time. It was nuts. It was nuts. But then the community stepped up. Like, we put out a lot of, liaison options in the local community. None of which were received, but, you know, like they were definitely heard. And then people from all over the United States, they funded the GoFundMe. They did, people would drive from all over and bring us ammo. Like I said, the vests, we have to date had enough, donated armor that every single person up here has armor, and the guard team actually has level 4 armor. Because we were donated some multiple series of level 4 plates. You know, we have a good amount of ammo. People sent us food and the networks that, were created through all of the actions of 2020, like snapped into line and like just took care of us. Like we asked for help and it felt like there was an immediate reaction. And people poured out of the woodwork to help us. And I don't think it would have been a whole different story without that. Like, I don't know what we would have done. Like, me and Jay were exhausted. Bonnie was running the ranch. Like, while me and Jay were up all night, then Bonnie was up all day doing the work of 3 people. And it was like those first couple of weeks were intense. Like it was really crazy.
And how many people were actually on the ranch at that time?
Yeah, like 9 or 10 people.
And you actually had like militia people come onto the property, right?
There were 2 people who came onto property. The guard that we desperately put a call out for within anti-fascist circles happened to come that day. He was tailed in at 80 miles per hour down our road.
Yeah.
I had to drive past, turn around at an intersection and point his gun at the cars chasing him, in order to get them to back off and to come on property, which was pretty convincing for him of the seriousness of the situation. And, he said, he found 2 people messing with the lock and the gate, around 1 or so, and then at around 3 o'clock, he found them creeping down under a bit of a ridge on our property, trying to get close to the house, but his presence alerted them and they ran off.
Yeah, he signaled for them to leave the property, and they turned around and ran. And they were in armor with long guns. So it was, and then, from then forward, they like observed and tested, but they never made it back onto the property after that. But we started having a full-time guard after that. And so we really like, because people reacted so swiftly, we were able to respond to that incursion like immediately with like a fully armed full guard patrols. Troop doing patrol. Yeah. Like it was pretty impressive.
And I'm all right by that. The people keep on coming back, raising hell with the hippies and the cowboys. They don't care about no trends. They don't care about songs that sell. Yeah, tomorrow I'll be gone. So tonight everybody just sing along. Raising hell with the hippies and the cowboys. I've been standing on the outside for all of my life, but I like the view, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, the yuppies and the hipsters and the wannabe saints, that ain't down home to me. I like $2 beers, I like $3 wells, and some old honky-tonk bar I know by the smell. Some old drunk on a bar stool on a Merle Haggard tune. That's my kind of room. Raising hell with the hippies and the cowboys. They don't care about no trends. They don't care about songs that sell. Yeah, tomorrow I'll be gone. So tonight everybody just sing along. Raising hell with the hippies and the cowboys.
When did all that kind of end, would you say, the siege?
Around
like,
April.
Yeah, mid-April, it was there was still some stuff going down on, like, Friday nights or Saturdays, and then it kind of petered off, to the point where we stopped having a routine guard. We also put up all the cameras, which helped us cut down on having to, like, pull people away from jobs and stuff to do guard. And we have the camera network set up now, and we're getting the 6-foot fence up, which is in no means like, yeah, a determined person could easily get on the property or whatever. Yeah. But it is more of a like warning. You're on film. Like if you want to be incognito, this isn't the way to do it. Maybe off kind of system that we're going with.
Yeah. The what we've seen thus far is that the intent is to not leave evidence and to largely intimidate, and you know, which is potentially life-threatening in the way that they're doing it, but they don't want to leave any kind of evidence, and we're basically building a fence where you would have to in order to get onto the property at this point.
They don't want a light shined on them, and so we just kind of like spotlighted it, and they've definitely shrunk back, so that was... It was nice to see that come to fruition. It was nice to see, because it was a complete gamble for us. Like, going public was either going to be okay and make it work, or a complete disaster for us, as far as, like, just getting chewed up by right-wing and, you know what I mean, like, more trolls and calling more attention to kind of us and, like, as trans people. It's not, like, the safest thing. We already know that the sheriff's department really doesn't like us. And, so, you know, like we rolled the dice and it's a happy ending, you know, like that wasn't, unfortunately, like that's not guaranteed. So, you know, like we had some very smart people look at the situation and give us advice on what to do. And we followed that advice and it panned out, you know?
how has it been since then? Like, in many ways, you're doing better at kind of this, I don't know, libertarian idea of, like, you know, rugged individuals out on the land than these other
people. Yeah, we're out homesteading the homesteaders, and we're a bunch of queers.
Yeah. The fundamental difference is that we do it as a community, which not only means a large number of us here, but also working within the community locally and within our anti-fascist networks, queer networks, alpaca networks.
Yeah, well. I think that they thought when we said community that we were talking about their idea of that very closed loop. homestead, you know, wife
maybe
and two
your
kids.
Church a little bit.
Your church is there when you need to build something. Whereas we were talking about like community defense and building like ways to feed people. And, you know, like we got in there and like started the recycling program and we're starting a community garden and we're talking to like all these people. We did supply runs during the riots in 2020. We, did security for the first trans march. We meant like, community and I don't think that they were ready. I think that they were limited by what they understood community to be and thought that we played within those same limitations, whereas we're like, nah, like everybody, what the f- are you talking about? Like, who would do this by themselves? That's dumb.
So I'm curious, now you brought up the idea of expanding this to like other places, and I think I saw one interview where you talked about you wanted to buy more land to expand the project. I'm just curious, you know, what does that look like to you? Is it more people? Is it more infrastructure? Kind of like a bigger network? Or is it all those things?
Well, so the goal since inception has been to spread this because everybody can't come to Colorado. So it's just impossible. And some people can't live outside of a city. And some people, you know, like this, we are like trying to create the inroad so that we can start doing down payments and co-signing and getting starter herds to other Tenacious Unicorn projects all around the country and then hopefully the world to create these safe havens for queer folks. We do want to like add land here, but I think that that's secondary to getting more of these places established further away from us. Brian, do you want to tell them about the one that's coming up? We're really proud of this one.
I feel like I should, I haven't been in enough, talks really, directly, but, we are currently looking, to, work more directly in a land back kind of fashion. We had a visitor one day who was, an indigenous trans lady who, is also interested in starting a similar project to ours, and we're looking to work in conjunction now to start a new area in Arizona, and they're trying to pick out some sacrificial land,
sacred
land.
Yeah.
Sorry.
the hunt is on for a piece of property that will be meaningful to them, and then it's just theirs, and they don't have to brand it Tenacious Unicorn or anything. That none of the places have to brand it as Tenacious Unicorn. We want to just support queer projects like ours in every state, even multiple states, but being able to add an element of land back to that and create an indigenous queer haven is the encapsulation of this project.
Yeah.
So that's the one we're most excited about right now. But we got a couple other in the works too. A lot of people are excited. We have the 501c3 up now. So we're, starting to take, donations on a level that can really start, to get this project rolling in the way that we as a collective envision it, which is, to create safe havens for queer folks that are self-sustaining, self-defendable, and as capitalism-free as we can make it.
Yeah.
I mean, there unfortunately has to be an element, but we're already starting those inroads. Like, we've figured out processing, we've figured out marketing, and we can help new ranches just kind of take off.
Jump right in.
And not have to worry about sustaining. or all the hellish problem solving and startup. Like, my body is now starting to break down. I'm in year three. I've been going every day of that 3 years, and like, I've got up rotator cuff and my back's all messed up. I've been in bed for 2 days. I'm like an old lady. But it's we want to save people that work, so this can just start to be a safe place for queer people. Because, you know, like, political, whatever, just ecologically, we're going to be in collapse inside the next 10 years. And you have to start thinking about, like, hard-hit communities and how we're going to make it in what the world's going to look like in a decade. And this project, I feel, is that, I mean, let's face it, last minute, hopefully Hail Mary, that helps save the queer community a little bit. But we got to get out beyond our borders. Like, it can't just be right here.
And also, like, this is Jay, the permaculturalist. Like, as we get our permaculture and our greenhouses set up, what I can do while all this is all going on is I can bring seeds and soil and plants to other queer communities, indigenous communities, black communities, brown communities, and just help them get their own food autonomy and create those mutual aid structures. So, and then, you know, as we get other ranches started and they get their stuff going, like, it's just a multiplicative effect.
You know? And we can feed people that need fed. We can get, you know, it is seizing the means of production on a very basic level. It is like the nuts and bolts of food, clothing, water. And that is what we're focused on, looking forward into what Earth is going to look like in 2031, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to take the conversation, both in terms of talking about climate change, but also I think, like, you know, we recently talked to Margaret Killjoy about some of this stuff. And I think it was interesting, kind of also, you know, on the climate change tip, but also on sort of like how these projects kind of like also intersect with a lot of communities that, you know, maybe swayed towards, like, you know, Trumpian fascism or something like that. I'm curious, like, do you see this project as something that can, like, maybe be a buffer against people just automatically being like, oh, those are the Antifa, you know, kill them or something like that? Like, do you see this as something that kind of, like, intervenes within that?
I've thought about this a lot, actually, because, like, I have a bunch of loofah seeds, and I'm always like, if you're in a community and the queers are the ones giving you your ability to, like,
clean yourself,
like, maybe even creating, like, soaps, and shampoos like, and soaps, like, out of, like, natural products, like, and then the Nazis come, or the, you know, the Christian fascists come, and they're like, hey, we want you to go help us kill these queer communities. We got to establish the
dominance,
you know,
like,
the new America that's Christian or whatever. And they're going to be like, what are you talking about? Like,
you mean the loofah sisters?
The people, like, who give us loofahs and they make, like, yarn for us, like, no.
And always have open larders.
And they bring us food. Just,
and them responding while wearing, like, 50% clothing that we
made. Like, with their bellies full.
No.
Community, like we keep saying, community is how you beat fascism. Like, when your belly's full and your family's safe, and it's because you're working together, it's really hard for Nazis to come in and tell you it's wrong. And I see this is the first step in establishing that kind of communication, that like, oh, like, no, they, like, they're in it for us, not them. Like, I like that. You have to show, you have to do it, you know, like, you can't just talk about it. And I think that that's a lot of what this project is like, no, look, it works. If you just do it, and you put your ego aside, it works. Weirdly, we've proved that every day here. Like, we strive to create a better version of ourselves every day. Like, you know, we have, you know, we're doing weekly meetings, and we have shared bank accounts, and we're really living what we say we think it should be. And it's hard to argue with somebody who's really living it. Like, people are like, oh, but what about this? Like, I don't know. Like, it'll come up in next week's meeting. Mm-hmm. Like, with that. Like, I don't know. I don't have the answers. We're just living it.
And I think people in the community who maybe are stuck in the America ideological box, when they see an alternative that works really well and it benefits them, they might become more open to it.
I mean, I don't have to, like, give away all of my labor and, like, suffer in this tiny box in the city. Holy shit. It really is, I think where revolution starts is like figuring this out, and then refusing to be governed, you know, like that's, you know, I don't know, not to get all political.
You're listening to It's Going Down, part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. Follow us online at itsgoingdown.org and on Twitter at IGD_news. If you like and appreciate this podcast, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and give us a one-time donation. Sign up to donate monthly or donate through Bitcoin. Again, that's itsgoingdown.org/shop to support. And now, back to the show. Well, in terms of climate change, I'm curious, you know, as the project goes forward and hopefully it gets bigger, what are some things that you all are thinking about just with that reality on the horizon? Like, is there certain things that you're looking to build towards to meet that?
Self-sufficiency. Yeah. That's the big one.
Especially getting, a big one, is, like, you know, you can feed 11 people off of a, like, 30-foot greenhouse relatively easily. Feeding the livestock is a different story. So figuring out I'm honestly thinking some kind of, like, livestock-oriented food forest is kind of where I'm headed as far as, like, feeding them, because alpaca and sheep both will eat, like, black locust and some willows, probably some other tree crops as well. And that can be integrated into, like, chestnut food systems for people and things like that. And also, like, converting our vehicles to diesel and then growing our own veggie oil or biodiesel, that it's going to be probably a pretty intensive and very, like, we got to really research it. Like, one of the recent visitors, I was, like, bringing this up, and I was like, so one thing I haven't ever seen talked about is how do you lubricate your engines? Supply lines are collapsed and climate change is incoming, or it's already here, but if supply lines are collapsed because of that and you can't get access to 5W-30, 10W-30, whatever, how do you lubricate your engines? Sure, you can power your diesel engine off of,
if you can't lubricate, veggie oil. What's the point?
But if you can't lubricate, you're just going to burn it out. And apparently safflower oil is a potential way to get around that. So, building like maybe a dedicated couple of greenhouses for veggie oil production and safflower oil production.
Being able to be mobile is going to be pretty, especially with what we're building. But I mean, even if that comes down to eventually horses.
Yeah, horses we and
like
donkeys.
To have, yeah, like these paths have been laid.
Yeah.
These problems have been figured out. You just have to listen to the people that did it and recognize that it's becoming relevant again.
Yeah.
Because we f***ed off with industrialism and capitalism. But it really is relearning. I feel every day that we're in this relearning process. There was fabulous, massive, structures, like social structures that worked long before imperialism came in, and colonialism ruined everything. These things were in place. It's just we have to kind of forget what we've been kind of hammered with, especially here in the U.S., and move forward into different. It is just thinking differently and then implementing it.
Yeah.
But it's at a tremendous effort. Like, you know, I don't know. I feel like we reinvent the wheel every day, but it's fine.
There's a lot of lost knowledge.
You know, one question that I have that always comes up in terms of whenever we have a conversation around, like, you know, quote, going back to the land or projects like these is, how does this intersect with actual struggles going on?
Well, I
think
the most
relevant is queer struggle.
Yeah, and I think that you need a place, like the struggles that are happening now, I think is what like sparks what we're doing. And then looking forward, we try to pay attention to the direction we're heading and have plans. But I feel that we're very rooted in the struggle that's happening now. I think that one informs the other, right? As you start planning forward, it starts making you question why. And you're like, okay, like we're going into climate collapse, but what the fuck are we doing? Like, why did this happen? How, like, why are, like, you know, why do we have the biggest jails on the planet in this country. Like, why do we have like all these things? Like, I think one informs the other. And as you look forward, you can't help but look at the struggles going on right now as things that need to be cured. If we have any hope, like, you have to throw yourself into the minutiae in order to solve the big picture.
And like, just in terms of logistics, like, cities in general are just going to be kind of the battlefield of like climate chaos capitalism, company towns like reintroduced, and like climate work camps and refugee camps. And we're going to be maybe, I'm hoping, a little insulated just because we're in a rural space. And if people like us in these rural spaces can provide the logistics and the resources to those people that are waging those struggles in the cities, in the refugee camps, and helping like transport resources and personnel.
And provide haven.
And provide like, haven.
You gotta come off like, the front line
every once
in a while.
That's a big part of resistance. Yeah. As being kind of the support structure.
You gotta grow food.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta have water, and you need a place to feel safe. And I think that that's what these rural spaces are going to become. Because even now, queer people come in, and you can see that lifting of a burden after they've been here for a minute. There's a moment where they realize, I can just be me. And I don't have to, like, deal with it. Like, I can just be me and it's cool. And I have to imagine going forward that becomes more and more true. Having safe spaces and secure places to feel at home is just going to be more and more important as capitalism kind of eats itself around us.
Let's switch now and talk about the film. You were saying that it might be out later this year and we can expect to see it hopefully on some streaming platforms. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it is the nitty gritty of the struggle that it's been to get this going, I guess. Ash was here for a lot of like the really dark stuff that happened, and then into the really light stuff, and kind of us growing and things like that. But it's a very real film, shot by somebody we trust immensely, and so they really were allowed into our space, and they really became a part of the ranch during that time. So it's going to be hard to watch at times. Mm-hmm. It's very real, but it's going to be worth getting through. I think it speaks to the broader struggle of being queer, and I think that it highlights what's happening in America right now.
So what's next for the project in general, would you say?
Working on hopefully expanding a little bit in housing to the extent we're able to with zoning. We recently added 3 people that came from
East Coast. Yeah.
East Coast.
And so housing is like just a major concern right now. I mean, this,
putting a greenhouse in
the greenhouse and the barn
in the barn. Yeah.
And the fencing, those are our big need to do's on the ranch right now.
And hopefully, donations go crazy and we can really start on the Arizona.
Yeah. The Landbrack project in Arizona is going to be awesome. I think that as the film comes out, that will find its funding source and get started. And then, you know, there's 2 pieces of blank land right next to us that don't have anything built on them that we would really like
to turn into pastures
yeah. and create a small lake with the extra wells, as well as expand housing and just really get the project up and moving. I don't know. We got legs and we're really excited about where it's going. You know, it's been a hard fight. It's been really exhausting, but to come out, I don't know, like to come out the other end, not only still fighting, but like stronger and like with more purpose. I think we've done the best that we can. And it's, I mean, frankly, it's humbling to be a part of, like, honestly, like people really are invested in what we're doing, and that is an absolutely
inspired.
Yeah, it's a sacred charge that they've given us to advance this project. And that's neat. I don't know. Like,
awesome. Well, anything else that you all want to talk about or say?
I always tell people to read Octavia Butler and check out @BuildSoil on Twitter. Tons of great permaculture information. Support his Chestnut Project if you can.
Well, how can people follow your work and support?
Oh, so we have a website, tenaciousunicornranch.com. We're also on Twitter at @tenaciousranch. We have a Facebook page, and we're on Instagram. We have a Patreon, which is Tenacious Unicorn Ranch, and you can get kind of like exciting updates and stuff there. And then
a GoFundMe as well.
We have a GoFundMe up and running.
All of these things are linked on the website.
They're all linked on the website, yeah. And if you happen to be a furry and in Denver and going to Denver, we are the official charity of Denver this year, and so can meet me and Bonnie. Yeah, you can meet me and Bonnie there. We'll have a room and we'll be doing fun talks about alpaca. We have our shirts. We have we actually got a poster board that's kind of awesome. So you can take a picture with an alpaca and it'll be a lot of fun.
And the, you can follow the updates for the documentary, on Twitter @TenaciousDoc.
@TenaciousDoc, yeah.
Yeah, the trailer looks, I watched like 3 times back to back. It's really, yeah. Really powerful, really good stuff. It looks like it's going to be an awesome film.
Yeah, Ash is amazing. Yeah. She's absolutely a genius.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.